All right. For a sermon today, we'll invite Paul Swinson to come up and talk about one of John Dober's books. Thank you, Paul, for volunteering and doing so much work over the evening to put this together.
Don't worry, I won't. As Dale was mentioning, and as I found out last night, John apparently has some kind of a stomach bug that's running through his family. So don't worry, though. I'm not going to stand up here and ad-lib or try to figure out what John might have meant by the title, Easy to be Hard, Easy to be Cold. Instead, I'm going to be reading a section from his new book, the title of which I actually don't know. Did we ever find the title of his new book? Scared Witless? Okay, that fits the essay too. He said it was from the first concept chapter of his new book called On Fear, and the title is The Actual and the Actuarial. But before I start, I kind of saw a golden opportunity here to say something you'll probably never hear again at this congregation. Today's reading is from the book of John. Chapter 1, verses 1 till the end. All right. So when I say I'm referring to John here. For nearly two decades, I wouldn't get on a plane. Well, that's not exactly true. I got on twice, but got off before takeoff. Not my finest hours. I was scared, terrified. Fear of flying? No, more like fear of falling, of crashing, of burning. It was a kind of claustrophobia, a terror of being enclosed in a tight space and my fate sealed by the prowess of some anonymous mechanics, as well as the skill and judgment of the pilots. And frankly, most pilots looked either way too old or far too young. None was just right. I'm going to have some occasional Marco Rubio moments here. I've been lecturing all week, so my voice is a little... Okay. It's not completely irrational to feel a certain anxiety while being strapped into an uncomfortable seat in an aluminum tube 35,000 feet in the air. At one level, feeling totally at ease could be a form of denial. Still, the facts, as against the feelings, should not paralyze one from getting on board, or worse, provoke one into fleeing. After my Peace Corps training at Brown University in 1966 for Tunisia, I showed up at the airport fully expecting to board, then refused to get on the plane. I ended up taking the HMS Queen Elizabeth to Cherbourg, the train to Paris, then on to Marseille and a boat to Tunis. Rationally, actuarially, I knew I was safer on the plane than in a taxi in Paris or living as a Jew in Arab Tunisia right after the Six-Day War. But rationality and actuarial calculations have little to do with fear. Our dangers are real. We should be frightened of certain things, but we are extraordinarily bad at linking actual risks with our fears and irrational reactions. This neurotic reflex is very nicely exemplified by the famous scene in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. When Butch and Sundance are trapped on a high cliff above a river and they have to jump to have any chance of escape. However, Butch won't jump because he can't swim. His partner laughs ruefully and assures him that the fall will kill him. I love that scene, actually. We tend to be afraid of the wrong things, or even when they are the right things, our actions and choices often are both disproportionate and counterproductive. When we're scared, we're often scared witless, which is to say we lose our wits, our reason, and our judgment. I have a good friend, a bright and intelligent person, who will not eat beef in fear of mad cow disease. Now, mad cow disease is real. It exists, and getting it is truly a bad career move. You will die, and you will die really ugly. So caring about it, being aware, is not crazy. However, the actuarial calculation should probably indicate that unless you spend a decade sucking on marrow bones in England, you probably shouldn't lose any sleep over it. The cholesterol, okay, that's actuarially a significant risk with beef marrow. Still, facts can be important, and the number of deaths in the United States from mad cow disease acquired in the United States, anybody want to take a guess on that one? How many deaths from mad cow disease? Zero. You will understand why my friend is the poster person for actuarial malpractice when you learn that my friend smokes. We are not rational animals. Being scared often panics us into some kind of stampede, physically rushing for the exits, storming the castle, and becoming a conscienceless mob. Or we can become frozen and unable to move at all, except for quivering in fear. Scientists recently renamed and expanded the old label of fight or flight. Now it's rendered more precisely as fight, flee, or freeze. None of these is a great option. The best option is the hardest. Think. We often react in a witless manner to all kinds of perceived threats. Our anxieties attack us or haunt us subversively in all areas of our lives. We have physical fears that we sometimes run from, or, being counterphobic, we also run towards them. My staying off of planes for 2 decades is not so different from skydiving. Fear often drives us to face the fear with an exaggerated and sometimes witless response. The normal, non-fear-driven response to airplanes is just getting on the damn things and flying. In an aside, I'm now almost normal. I no longer actively fear flying, but I do hate airports, which I can understand. Being frightened is an important and often appropriate feeling. It's a way of keeping us alive. Fear, like pain, may not be fun. Or it may be, but I promise not to judge you. That was in parentheses. I don't know what that is. But it's often fact-based. The truth is, we're mortal. There are dangers and foreseeable disasters. Someday, the sun will nova. The great issue in life, politics, society, family, and love is the appropriate place of fear and how we calculate, use, and misuse this reflex that is both inherent and instilled. Babies are said to be born with only 2 fears. I guess I could ask you to guess that one, but that would take a while. 2 fears, fire and falling. I'm inclined to add abandonment to the list. Nearly everything else is learned. We're not even born with a fear of death. Mortality doesn't begin to become real till we're around 7. And even then, I'd argue that it's never fully real, understood, or accepted. We don't have to understand or accept something in order to be scared. As the great author William Saroyan lay dying, he remarked, "I knew death was inevitable, but I thought it would make an exception for me." Denial can, in fact, be a symptom of great fear. Why, after all, deny something trivial? In many ways, being scared witless is taking a perceived threat, physical, spiritual, or social, and reacting with reflex instead of reason. We often close our eyes to avoid the pain, but naturally this fails as a strategy. Sometimes we have to train ourselves to go against some instincts in order to escape the threats. Boxers are a good example. Here's another parenthesis. Hey, there's an unusual sentence. Boxers are so rarely a good example of anything. When someone throws a punch in our direction, our natural instinct is to blink. Blinking doesn't prevent the blow from landing. In fact, it gets in the way of blocking, ducking, or otherwise avoiding the punch. It's more or less natural, but at the same time, maladaptive. A trained boxer learns to keep his, or now her, eyes open, not to blink, but to be, against our instincts, focused on what most people would close their eyes to. Looking at our fears, our threats, and anxieties may not allow us to avoid all of them all the time. In fact, I promise it won't. But consciousness and intentionality can give us tools for better dealing with the slings and arrows, real and imagined, of the outrageous fortune that is life. Amen.